From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. The disappearance of the Lyon sisters from a mall in Montgomery County in 1975 shocked the public and mystified police. 4 decades later, an overlooked tip led police to a new suspect, Lloyd Welch.
And what they learned to do with Lloyd over time was to ignore the stories that he told them, but to pay attention to the little details in those stories that kept recurring, no matter how often or how dramatically he changed his account.
Mark Bowden's latest book, The Last Stone, describes how detectives sorted through Welch's elaborate explanations. We hear how Bowden covered the story as a rookie reporter for the Baltimore News-American and what he thinks lies behind the popularity of the true crime genre. It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. On March 25th, 1975, the disappearance of two young girls rocked the Washington suburbs and all of Maryland. For 4 decades, the case remained unsolved. 31 boxes of evidence and no clues as to where the girls had been taken. And then a break.
12-year-old Sheila Lyon and 10-year-old Catherine Lyon left their home and walked to nearby Wheaton Plaza.
It's here they were seen talking with a man who appeared to be showing them a cassette recorder.
Catherine and Sheila were reported missing to the Montgomery County Police Department that evening by their parents.
Well, the cold case squad in Montgomery County decided to reopen the investigation. They felt that something must have been overlooked in all of their evidence.
This case is the focus of Mark Bowden's latest book, The Last Stone. Bowden has written more than a dozen books, including Killing Pablo and Black Hawk Down. He was a reporter and columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer for more than 30 years before joining the University of Delaware faculty in 2013. He'll be speaking about his new book tonight at the Church of the Redeemer for the Pratt Library's Writers Live series in conversation with author Dan Vesperman. Mark, welcome to On the Record.
Thank you, Sheila.
Why was the disappearance of the Lyon sisters such a big news story?
Well, it's a tragedy. And, you know, I think, in those days, without 24/7 cable TV and the internet, these were primarily local stories. And, you know, for the Washington, Virginia, Baltimore area, it was a shocking development, I think, in the 1970s when this happened. There was a general confidence that the suburbia was a kind of safe place for children and families. And this, I think, rocked that idea to its core.
You talk about it as a regional trauma.
It was. I mean, it was the kind of thing where parents immediately began reevaluating the kind of freedom that they allowed their children. I grew up in Timonium, just outside of Baltimore, and I remember my mom telling my brothers and sisters and I, after breakfast, get lost, don't come back until lunchtime. And the idea was, you know, the town was ours to roam. There were just, you know, family after family like our own, and parents didn't really worry about their children's safety that much. When something like this happens, I think it makes everybody rethink that notion.
How did you hear about this case?
I was a new reporter at the Baltimore News-American, and my job was to come into the newsroom at 4 o'clock in the morning and call every police barracks in the state and ask if anything had happened overnight. This was a mind-numbing exercise and generally yielded nothing. But on this day, I think it was March 26th of 75, the spokesman at the Wheaton Maryland barracks said that they were searching for these two little girls.
And so you jumped into the coverage. You went straight to the scene?
I did. You know, my assignment was to do all these phone calls, and if something of interest was happening, I should go immediately there. The News American was an afternoon paper, so if I got on a story quickly enough, I could even get on the front page of the paper later that day. And so I drove down to Wheaton and started covering the story. Ended up staying there for about 2 weeks as the story sort of peaked over the next few days, and then gradually kind of ground down to a very frustrating tragedy.
This was front page news.
It was. It was the first front page news I ever reported. And as such, you know, I was fairly excited. I was 23 years old and a new reporter, and I'd never covered a big story before. So it was heady. And at the same time, you know, I was spending time with the Lyon family, with John and Mary Lyon, and with the police who were working frantically to figure out what happened. And it was hard not to get drawn in emotionally to just how distraught this lovely family was about what had happened, and how mystified the authorities were over who had done this and why.
Typically, the first suspects in a disappearance are the close relatives. Were the sister's parents investigated?
They were. In fact, as you say, Sheila, that was where the first suspicions landed, and only because of the statistics, which indicate that usually it is a family member involved. But the Lyon family was an idyllic suburban family, four children. The effects that these girls left behind, the notes, their diaries, they were all evidence of a very happy family.
And the parents were very open. You reminisce about sitting and talking with John Lyon, who was a radio personality.
Yeah. In part because John, you know, was a professional on the radio. He certainly was aware, and I'm sure the police advised him, that the publicity around their disappearance was helpful. It was driving people to come to the police with tips and sightings. And so the Lyon family opened their home and invited everybody in. I remember, you know, them handing out beer and sodas and sitting with John as he strummed a guitar and tried to answer my questions, which were pretty dumb questions. But, you know, that was all that they could do.
How rare is it for a stranger to be the perpetrator of an abduction?
Extremely rare. I think fewer than 0.01% of child disappearances involve a stranger kidnapping. And even in most of those cases, the children are found. This was an instance where two little girls had gone missing, and the statistics on that are so tiny you can almost say that it never happens. But of course, in this case, it had.
So 38 years later, what prompted police to dig into this case again?
Well, I'd have to say that the Montgomery County, Maryland police never stopped investigating this case. It was a very notorious unsolved crime that kind of haunted the police department. And one of the girls' brothers, Jay, when he grew up, joined the Montgomery County Police Department. So it became almost a family tragedy. And so periodically, over the years, detectives would pick this case back up and reinvestigate. And this happened off and on over the next 3 or 4 decades. What really kickstarted the investigation in 2013 was when one of the cold case detectives, Chris Homrock, came across a statement by a then 18-year-old kid who had walked into the mall about a week after the girls disappeared and said that he had witnessed the whole thing.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Mark Bowden, author of more than a dozen books, including Black Hawk Down. His latest is The Last Stone, about the 1975 disappearance of the Lyon sisters from Wheaton Plaza and a 2013 break in the case. So this guy, who was 18 in 1975, Lloyd Welch, who is he?
He was, you know, at the time, just an 18-year-old kind of drifter who had been given up by his family when he was just a kid. He'd been raised in foster homes and in shelters for children in Washington, D.C. area. At age 18, he was a drug addict and kind of living on the streets. Off and on, he would stay with relatives in the Hyattsville area where his father and stepmother lived. But he was a kind of ne'er-do-well who had no schooling and, you know, got himself high on April 1st of 1975 and walked in and said he had witnessed the girls being kidnapped from the mall.
That was a few days after it had happened.
Right. It was the girls were disappeared on the 25th, and this was April 1st.
And police didn't think his story held up at the time.
It didn't. And in fact, he admitted to them after they gave him a lie detector test and he flunked that he'd made up most of what he'd told them. So they dismissed him. They wrote a little report up about the interview with him and wrote lied at the top of it. But there was the one portion of the lie detector test that Lloyd Welsh hadn't flunked was his claim to have been in the mall when the girls were taken.
So all those years later, why did police want to talk to him?
Because the detectives, Chris Homrock in particular, had focused his suspicions on a man named Ray Molesky, who Chris had become convinced was the kidnapper and killer of the Lyon girls. Molesky had died some years earlier in prison. But in the statement that Lloyd Welsh gave in 1975, he ended by saying that the man he had seen walking out of the mall with the girls walked with a limp. And Ray Molesky had walked with a limp. So Homrock realized that if he could find this Lloyd Welsh, he may be able to find someone who could confirm that the kidnapper was Ray Molesky.
If he could find Lloyd Welsh. So how did police find Lloyd Welsh?
Well, in our marvelous digital age, there's access to, the Internet and crime databases, and they quickly learned that Lloyd Welsh had a long criminal history and was, in fact, locked up in Delaware for child molestation, of all things. And so they determined to go down and pay him a visit.
And he agrees to talk to the detectives. He keeps talking and keeps talking. How did his version of the girls' kidnapping vary over many conversations?
It kept changing and changing and changing. In fact, on the first day that they went to talk to him, initially approaching him thinking he might just be a witness, he made up a whole different story about what he had seen on the day the girls disappeared. He had forgotten, I suppose, or had no idea that the police still had a record of his original statement in 1975, so he told them a completely different story. And when confronted with the fact that he had just now told a totally different story, he made up a completely different story. And this would happen periodically. The book is primarily the story of this incredibly difficult interrogation with a subject who, as one reviewer put it, keeps removing the slalom bars and putting them up in a different place and then skating off in a different direction.
Why did Welch keep talking?
That's a good question. I asked him, and he lied to me about it. He said he had been forced to talk, which was not true. I had witnessed 70-plus hours of his interrogation. He was nothing if not a willing participant. I think he wanted to keep talking for a couple reasons. One is that he knew he had done this, and he didn't know how much the detectives knew. So in order to invent stories to protect himself, he had to keep finding out what the detectives knew. And so that was one motivation for him to keep talking. Another one was that he loves to talk, and he, I think, considered himself to be sophisticated enough that he could bamboozle these detectives and protect himself.
How did you have access to all these dozens of hours of interrogation on video?
Well, when I first learned that, you know, they had named Lloyd Welsh as a suspect, after all these years, I drove down and met the detectives who conducted these investigations and or these interrogations, and I asked them if they had any record of them, and they said, yeah, we videotaped the whole thing. In time, they were willing to give me all those videos, so I spent a lot of time watching and listening to Lloyd Welsh.
A wealth of information. How did you decide what to cut and what to include in the book?
Well, that was the big challenge, obviously. And increasingly, I think, in today's world of journalism, the actual record of things is voluminous. And reporters like myself are in the position of having to sort of divine the story out of a mass of recorded material. In this case, you know, I listened to the whole thing, all 70 plus hours. I remember my wife telling me that she couldn't wait till I was finished with the story. She was so sick of hearing Lloyd Welsh's voice. You know, and took notes, you know, figuring out in consultation with the detectives what were key moments in these many sessions and why. And learning, you know, more about what was going on in the detectives' minds as they were talking to him, so that ultimately, you know, I tried to boil down my telling of the story and my account of the interrogations to bare bones. I mean, to basically those steps that really led them to an understanding of what had happened.
Mark Bowden's new book is The Last Stone, which details how detectives solved a four-decades-old cold case, the 1975 disappearance of the Lyon sisters from Wheaton Plaza Mall. Quick break now on the record. When we're back, why is the true crime genre so popular? I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. The 1975 disappearance of two young girls, Sheila and Kate Lyon, stunned families living in the D.C. suburbs and haunted the Montgomery County Police Department. My guest is author Mark Bowden. We're talking about his latest book, The Last Stone, which follows a break in this cold case that led detectives to answers about what happened to the Lyon sisters. The main suspect, Lloyd Welsh, is constantly telling detectives that this time he is telling the full truth. How did police sort out what was actually valuable information?
Well, that was really, I think, the most interesting piece of the story for me. Dave Davis, who was the primary interrogator, said to me early on that when people lie, they tend to lie about the big things, but flesh out the lies, their lies with the truth. And what they learned to do with Lloyd over time was to ignore the stories that he told them, but to pay attention to the little details in those stories that kept recurring no matter how often or how dramatically he changed his account. So things like a description of the car that the girls were driven away in, a description of the room where the girls were held after they were kidnapped, what little things that the girls said or did, these were details that kept popping up in every version of the story that he told. And ultimately, those were the things that they came to focus on as the truth.
NPR noted that when we think of criminal interrogation these days, it's often not positive. Your book is a really different example.
And I've been fascinated by interrogation for a long time. I wrote an essay for The Atlantic some years ago during the war in Iraq about the moral and ethical and practical issues involved in getting someone who has every reason in the world not to tell the truth to tell it. And here was an opportunity for me to wade right into the interview room and witness step by step by step exactly how these very skilled police interrogators convinced Lloyd Welsh that somehow it was in his best interests to reveal what had happened when it manifestly was not.
Each of the Montgomery County detectives investigating this cold case had a different style of interrogation. What was the most effective?
Well, I think you can't say any one of them was most effective because the effect that they had on Lloyd was collaborative. I think the existence of Mark Janney, who tended to play the harsh interrogator who would confront Lloyd with the obvious inconsistencies and lies that he was telling them, is then contrasted by Dave Davis, whose approach was very friendly. As one of the interrogators said, that Dave is very genuine, even when he's not being genuine. I mean, Dave cozied up to Lloyd, and in time, Lloyd would confide in Dave, particularly when he felt threatened by Mark. Katie Leggett, on the other hand, another of the interrogators, she was very skilled at sort of playing on Lloyd's emotions, such as they were, but also inventing scenarios that would shake Lloyd into admitting certain things or in changing his stories again in ways that prove meaningful.
That's Mark Bowden, author of The Last Stone, here on the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. He'll be speaking tonight at the Church of the Redeemer about the book, which untangles the interrogations of Lloyd Welch, a suspect in the 1975 disappearance of the Lyon sisters from Wheaton Plaza Mall. Don't want to give away too much of the book, but you mentioned that you met with Lloyd Welch at a state prison in Delaware. What was your impression?
Well, it was interesting to me, obviously, to meet him after watching him for so many hours in video. You form an impression of someone when you see them on a screen or listen to their recorded voice that's a little different than what you find in person. In person, I found him to be a somewhat smaller, somewhat less impressive person than I had imagined watching him on all these tapes. He was someone without any real sense of situation. He, you know, had this idea that somehow he could control me and he'd be able to tell me that I was not allowed to write about him or use his picture, all of which I know is completely false because I've been a reporter for a very long time. I know exactly what my rights are journalistically. But nevertheless, tried to sort of bully me, threaten me, all of which I found very unthreatening, to be honest, almost pathetic. So I left with a somewhat diminished impression of him as, number one, a sort of how clever he was, and secondly, how threatening he was.
From books to documentaries to podcasts, why do you think true crime is such a popular genre?
Well, it's obviously always been a staple of journalism, and you can go back and read pamphlets from the colonial era, and lurid crime has always fascinated people, has always been written about and reported. I think that today, the prevalence of videotape, audiotape, raw material, which are often part of police surveillance, and just frankly, the fact that there's so many cameras in our modern world that very few criminal acts take place outside of a camera or a microphone. And so this gives, I think, storytellers in all media a rich opportunity to tell very detailed and fascinating stories about human behavior that appalls us, but also reveals, I think, something that people find fascinating.
How do you balance telling this story without hurting the victim's family or innocent individuals dragged into the case by Lloyd Welch?
Well, I think I would never have written this story if I didn't have the opportunity to explore this interrogation, which I found remarkable. The book that I wrote is primarily about how these detectives got Lloyd Welch to admit what he had done. Now, the backdrop to that story is obviously the tragedy of the Lyon sisters, which I had covered back in 1975. So, I mean, there is no way of writing the story that I wrote without relating the overall horrible nature of this crime. But I did write to the Lyon family before I started and got word back from them through the detectives that they had no objection to my writing about this. I think because they recognized that the extraordinary work that the police department had done deserved to be noted and recognized.
Well, congratulations on this book, and thanks for telling us about it.
Thank you, Sheila.
Mark Bowden's latest book is The Last Stone. It details the unraveling of the mystery surrounding the 1975 disappearance of the Lyon sisters from Wheaton Plaza. You can catch him tonight at the Pratt Library's Writers Live event, 7 p.m. at the Church of the Redeemer, 5603 North Charles Street in Baltimore. We have details at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. I'm Sheila Cast. Glad you're listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.